Chapter 12. Except for those hours when communications had been cut off, I had never really lost the sense of being part of Justice of Torren. My kilometres of white-walled corridor, my captain, the decade commanders, each decade's lieutenants, each one's smallest gesture, each breath, was visible to me. I had never lost the knowledge of my ancillaries. 20-bodied, one Amaat, one Torren, one Etrepa, one Bo, and 2 Esk. Hands and feet for serving those officers, voices to speak to them. My thousands of ancillaries in frozen suspension. Never lost the view of Shisona itself, all blue and white. Old boundaries and divisions erased by distance. From that perspective, events in Oz were nothing, invisible, completely insignificant. In the approaching shuttle, I felt the distance decrease, felt more forcefully the sensation of being the ship. One Esk became even more what it had always been, one small part of myself. My attention was no longer commanded by things apart from the rest of the ship. 2 Esk had taken 1 Esk's place while 1 Esk was on the planet. 2 Esk prepared tea in the Esk decade room for its lieutenants, my lieutenants. It scrubbed the white-walled corridor outside Esk's baths, mended uniforms torn on leave. 2 of my lieutenants sat over a game board in the decade room, placing counters around, swift and quiet, 3 others watching. The lieutenants of the Amaat, Torren, Etrepa, and Bo decades, the decade commanders, 100 Captain Rubran, administrative officers and medics, talked, slept, bathed, according to their schedules and inclinations. Each decade held 20 lieutenants and its decade commander, but Esk was now my lowest occupied deck. Below Esk, from Var down, half of my decade decks, was cold and empty, though the holds were still full. The emptiness and silence of those spaces where officers had once lived had disturbed me at first, but I was used to it by now. On the shuttle, in front of 1 Esk, Lieutenant Orne sat silent, jaw clenched. She was in some respects more physically comfortable than she had ever been in Oz. The temperature, 20 degrees Celsius, was more suitable for her uniform jacket and trousers, and the stink of swamp water had been replaced by the more familiar and more easily tolerable smell of recycled air. But the tiny spaces, which when she had first come to Justice of Torren had excited pride in her assignment and anticipation of what the future might hold, now seemed to trap and confine her. She was tense and unhappy. Esk Decade Commander Tiaund sat in her tiny office. It held only 2 chairs and a desk close against 1 wall, barely more than a shelf, and space for perhaps 2 more people to stand. "Lieutenant Orne has returned," I said to her, and to 100 Captain Rubran on the command deck. The shuttle docked with a thunk. Captain Rubran frowned. She had been surprised and dismayed at the news of Lieutenant Orne's sudden return. The order had come directly from Anaanda Miatnaai, who was not to be questioned. Along with it had come orders not to ask what had happened. In her office on the Esk deck, Commander Tiaund sighed, closed her eyes and said, "Tea?" She sat silent till 2 Esk brought her a cup and a flask, poured and set both at the commander's elbow. "She'll see me at her earliest convenience." 1 Esk's attention was mostly on Lieutenant Orne, threading her way through the lift and the narrow white corridors that would take her to the Esk decade, to her own quarters. I read relief when she found those corridors empty, except for 2 Esk. "Commander Tiaund will see you at your earliest convenience," I said to Lieutenant Orne, transmitting directly to her. She acknowledged with a brief twitch of her fingers as she entered the Esk corridors. 2 Esk vacated the deck, filing down the corridor to the hold and its waiting suspension pods, and 1 Esk took up whatever tasks 2 Esk had been doing, and also followed Lieutenant Orne. Above, on medical, a tech medic began to lay out what she needed to replace 1 Esk's missing segment. At the door of her own small quarters, the same that more than 1,000 years before had belonged to Lieutenant Syverdon, Lieutenant Orne turned to say something to the segment that followed her, and then stopped.
"What?"
she asked after an instant.
"Something's wrong. What is it?"
"Please excuse me, Lieutenant," I said. "In the next few minutes, the tech medic will connect a new segment. I might be unresponsive for a short while."
"Unresponsive?"
she said, feeling momentarily overwhelmed for some reason I couldn't quite understand, and then guilty and angry. She stood before the unopened door of her quarters, took 2 breaths, and then turned and went back down the corridor toward the lift. A new segment's nervous system has to be more or less functional for the hookup. They tried it in the past with dead bodies and failed. The same with fully sedated bodies. The connection was never made properly. Sometimes the new segment is given a tranquilizer, but sometimes the tech medic prefers to thaw the new body out and tie it down quickly without any sedation at all. This eliminates the chancy step of sedating just the right amount, but it always makes for an uncomfortable hookup. This particular tech medic didn't care much about my comfort. She wasn't obliged to care, of course. Lieutenant Orne entered the lift that would bring her to medical just as the tech medic triggered the release on the suspension pod that held the body. The lid swung up, and for 1/100 of a second, the body lay still and icy within its pool of fluid. The tech medic rolled the body out of the pod onto a neighbouring table, the fluid sliding and sheeting off it, and in the same moment it awoke, convulsive, choking and gagging. The preserving medium slides out of throat and lungs easily on its own, but the first few times the experience is a discomforting one. Lieutenant Orne exited the lift, strode down the corridor toward medical, with 1 ESC-18 close behind her. The tech medic went swiftly to work, and suddenly I was on the table. I was walking behind Lieutenant Orne. I was taking up the mending 2 ESC had set down on its way to the holds. I was laying myself down on my small, close bunks. I was wiping a counter in the decade room. And I could see and hear, but I had no control of the new body, and its terror raised the heart rates of all 1 ESC segments. The new segment's mouth opened, and it screamed, and in the background, it heard laughter. I flailed. The binding came loose, and I rolled off the table, fell 1.5 meters to the floor with a painful thud. "Don't! Don't! Don't!" I thought at the body, but it wasn't listening. It was sick. It was terrified. It was dying. It pushed itself up and crawled, dizzy. Where, it didn't care so long as it got away. Then hands under my arms. Elsewhere, 1 ESC was motionless, urging me up, and Lieutenant Orne. "Help," I croaked, not in Ratcha'ai. Damn medic pulled out a body without a decent voice. "Help me." "It's all right." Lieutenant Orne shifted her grip, put her arms around the new segment, pulled me in closer. It was shivering, still cold from suspension and from terror. "It's all right. It'll be all right." The segment gasped and sobbed for what seemed forever, and I thought maybe it was going to throw up until the connection clicked home and I had control of it. I stopped the sobbing. "There," said Lieutenant Orne. Horrified, sick to her stomach.
"Much better."
I saw that she was newly angry. Or perhaps this was another edge of the distress I'd seen since the temple.
"Don't injure my unit,"
Lieutenant Orne said curtly, and I realized that though she was still looking at me, she was talking to the tech medic.
"I didn't, Lieutenant,"
answered the tech medic, with a trace of scorn in her voice. They'd had this conversation at greater and more acrimonious length during the annexation. The medic had said,
"It's not like it's human. It's been in the hold 1,000 years. It's nothing but a part of the ship."
Lieutenant Orne had complained to Commander Tiaund, who hadn't understood Lieutenant Orne's anger, and said so. But thereafter, I hadn't dealt with that particular medic.
"If you're so squeamish," the medic continued, "maybe you're in the wrong place."
Lieutenant Orne turned, angry, and left the room without saying anything further. I turned and walked back to the table with some trepidation. The segment was already resisting, and I knew that this tech medic wouldn't care if it hurt when she put in my armor and the rest of my implants. Things were always a bit clumsy while I got used to a new segment. It would occasionally drop things, or fire off disorienting impulses, random jolts of fear or nausea. Things always seemed off kilter for a bit, but after a week or two it would usually settle down. Most of the time, anyway. Sometimes a segment simply would not function properly, and then it would have to be removed and replaced. They screened the bodies, of course, but it's not perfect. The voice wasn't the sort I preferred, and it didn't know any interesting songs, not ones I didn't already know anyway. I still can't shake the slight, and definitely irrational suspicion that the tech medic chose that particular body just to annoy me. After a quick bath, in which I assisted, and a change into a clean uniform, Lieutenant Orne presented herself to Commander Tierund.
Orne.
The decade commander waved Lieutenant Orne to the opposite chair.
I'm glad to have you back, of course.
Thank you, sir, said Lieutenant Orne, sitting.
I didn't expect to see you so soon. I was sure you'd be downside for a while longer.
Lieutenant Orne didn't answer. Commander Tierund waited for 5 seconds in silence, and then said,
I would ask what happened, but I'm ordered not to.
Lieutenant Orne opened her mouth, took a breath to speak, stopped, surprised. I had said nothing to her about the orders not to ask what had happened. Corresponding orders to Lieutenant Orne not to tell anyone had not come. A test, I suspected, which I was quite confident Lieutenant Orne would pass.
Bad?
Asked Commander Tierund, wanting very much to know more, pushing her luck asking even that much.
Yes, sir.
Lieutenant Orne looked down at her gloved hands resting in her lap.
Very. Your fault?
Everything on my watch is my responsibility, isn't it, sir?
Yes, Commander Tierund acknowledged. But I'm having trouble imagining you doing anything improper.
The word was weighted in Radcha'ai, part of a triad of justice, propriety, and benefit. Using it, Commander Tierund implied more than just that she expected Lieutenant Orne to follow regulations or etiquette, implied she suspected some injustice was behind events. Though she could certainly not say so plainly, she possessed none of the facts of the matter, and surely did not wish to give anyone the impression she did. And if Lieutenant Orne were to be punished for some breach, she wouldn't want to have publicly taken Lieutenant Orne's part, no matter what her private opinion. Commander Tierund sighed, perhaps out of frustrated curiosity.
Well, she continued with feigned cheerfulness, now you've got plenty of time to catch up on gym time, and you're way behind on renewing your marksmanship certification.
Lieutenant Orne forced a humorless smile. There had been no gym in Oz, nor any place remotely resembling a firing range.
Yes, sir.
And Lieutenant, please don't go up to medical unless you really need to. I could see Lieutenant Orne wanted to protest, to complain, but that too would have been a repeat of an earlier conversation.
Yes, sir.
Dismissed. By the time Lieutenant Orne finally entered her quarters, it was nearly time for supper, a formal meal eaten in the decade room in the company of the other ESC lieutenants. Lieutenant Orne pled exhaustion. No lie, as it happened. She had barely slept 6 hours since she'd left Ors nearly 3 days before. She sat on her bunk, slumped and staring, until I entered, eased off her boots, and took her coat.
All right,
she said, then closed her eyes and swiveled her legs up onto the bunk.
I get the hint.
She was asleep 5 seconds after she laid her head down. The next morning, 18 of my 20 ESC lieutenants stood in the decade room, drinking tea
and waiting for breakfast.
By custom, they couldn't sit without the senior-most lieutenant. The Esk-Decade room's walls were white, with a blue and yellow border painted just under the ceiling. On one wall, opposite a long counter, were secured various trophies of past annexations, scraps of two flags, red and black and green, a pink clay roof tile with a raised design of leaves moulded into it, an ancient sidearm, unloaded, and its elegantly styled holster, a jewelled Gaonish mask. An entire window from a Valskayan temple, coloured glass arranged to form a picture of a woman holding a broom in one hand, three small animals at her feet. I remembered taking it out of the wall myself and carrying it back here. Every decade room on the ship had a window from that same building. The temple's vestments and equipment had been thrown into the street, or found their way to other decade rooms on other ships. It was normal practice to absorb any religion the rats ran across, to fit its gods into an already blindingly complex genealogy, or to say merely that the supreme creator deity was Amaat, under another name, and let the rest sort themselves out. Some quirk of the Valskayan religion made this difficult for them, and the result had been destructive. Among the recent changes in Ratch policy, Anaanda Miatna'ai had legalized the practice of Valskai's insistently separate religion, and the governor of the Valskai had given the building back. There had been talk of returning the windows, since we had still at that time been in orbit around Valskai itself, but ultimately they were replaced with copies. Not long after, the decades below Esk were emptied and closed, but the windows still hung on the walls of the empty, dark decade rooms. Lieutenant Isaiya entered, walked straight to the icon of Torin in its corner niche, and lit the incense, waiting in the red bowl at the icon's feet. Six officers frowned, and two made a very quiet, surprised murmur. Only Lieutenant Dariot spoke. "Is Orn not coming to breakfast?" Lieutenant Isaiya turned toward Lieutenant Dariot, showed an expression of surprise that did not, so far as I could tell, mirror her actual feelings, and said, "Amaat's grace, I completely forgot Orn was back." At the back of the group, safely shielded from Lieutenant Isaiya's view, one very junior lieutenant cast a look at another very junior lieutenant.
"It's been so very quiet," Lieutenant Isaiya continued. "It's difficult to believe she is back."
"Silence and cold ashes," quoted the junior lieutenant who had received the other's meaningful glance, more daring than her companion. The poem quoted was an elegy for someone whose funeral offerings had been deliberately neglected. I saw Lieutenant Isaiya react with an instant of ambivalence. The next line spoke of food offerings not made for the dead, and the junior lieutenant conceivably might have been criticizing Lieutenant Orn for not coming to supper the night before, or breakfast on time this morning. "It really is one Esk," said another lieutenant, concealing her smirk at the very junior lieutenant's cleverness, looking closely at the segments that were at the moment laying out plates of fish and fruit on the counter. "Maybe Orn broke it of its bad habits. I hope so."
"Why so quiet, one?" asked Lieutenant Dariot.
"Oh, don't get it started," groaned another lieutenant. "It's too early for all that noise."
"If it was Orn, good for her," said Lieutenant Isaiya. "A little late, though."
"Like now," said a lieutenant at Lieutenant Isaiya's elbow. "Give me food while yet I live."
Another quote, another reference to funeral offerings, and a rebuttal in case the junior lieutenant had intended insult in the wrong direction. "Is she coming or not? If she isn't coming, she should say so." At that moment, Lieutenant Orn was in the bath, and I was attending her. I could have told the lieutenants that Lieutenant Orn would be there soon, but I said nothing, only noted the level and temperature of the tea in the black glass bowls various lieutenants held, and continued to lay out breakfast plates. Near my own weapon storage, I cleaned my 20 guns so I could stow them, along with their ammunition. In each of my lieutenants' quarters, I stripped the linen from their beds. The officers of Amaat, Torin, Etrepa, and Bo were all well into breakfast, chattering, lively. The captain ate with the decade commanders, a quieter, more sober conversation. One of my shuttles approached me, four Bow lieutenants returning from leave, strapped into their seats, unconscious. They would be unhappy when they woke.
"Ship," said Lieutenant Darriot. "Will Lieutenant Orne be joining us for breakfast?"
"Yes, Lieutenant," I said, with one Esk-6's voice. In the bath I poured water over Lieutenant Orne, who stood, eyes closed, on the grating over the drain. Her breathing was even, but her heart rate was slightly elevated, and she showed other signs of stress. I was fairly sure her tardiness was deliberate, designed to give her the bath to herself. Not because she couldn't handle Lieutenant Isaiah, she certainly could, but because she was still distressed from the past day's events.
"When?" asked Lieutenant Isaiah, frowning just slightly.
"About 5 minutes, Lieutenant." A chorus of groans went up.
"Now, Lieutenants," Lieutenant Isaiah admonished, "she is our senior, and we should all have patience with her right now. Such a sudden return, when we all thought the Divine would never agree to her leaving Oars. Found out she wasn't such a good choice, eh?"
sneered the Lieutenant at Lieutenant Isaiah's elbow. She was close to Lieutenant Isaiah in more than one sense. None of them knew what had happened, and couldn't ask, and I, of course, had said nothing.
"Not likely," said Lieutenant Darriot, her voice a shade louder than usual. She was angry. "Not after 5 years."
I took the tea flask, turned from the counter, went over to where Lieutenant Darriot stood, and poured 11 milliliters of tea into the nearly full bowl she held.
"You like Lieutenant Orne, of course," said Lieutenant Isaiah. "We all do, but she doesn't have breeding. She wasn't born for this. She works so very hard at what comes naturally to us. I would hardly be surprised if 5 years was all she could take without cracking."
She looked at the empty bowl in her gloved hand.
"I need more tea."
"You think you'd have done a better job in Orne's place?"
observed Lieutenant Darriot.
"I don't trouble myself with hypotheticals," answered Lieutenant Isaiah. "The facts are what they are. There's a reason Orne was senior Esk-Lieutenant long before any of us got here. Obviously Orne has some ability, or she'd never have done as well as she has, but she's reached her limit."
A quiet murmur of agreement.
"Her parents are cooks," Lieutenant Isaiah continued. "I'm sure they're excellent at what they do. I'm sure she would manage a kitchen admirably."
Three lieutenants snickered. Lieutenant Darriot said, her voice tight and edged,
"Really?"
Finally dressed, uniform as perfect as I could make it, Lieutenant Orne stepped out of the dressing room into the corridor, 5 steps away from the decade room. Lieutenant Isaiah noticed Lieutenant Darriot's mood with a familiar ambivalence. Lieutenant Isaiah was senior, but Lieutenant Darriot's house was older, wealthier than Lieutenant Isaiah's, and Lieutenant Darriot's branch of that house were direct clients to a prominent branch of Mir Na'ai itself. Theoretically, that didn't matter here. Theoretically. All the data I had received from Lieutenant Isaiah that morning had had an underlying taste of resentment, which grew momentarily stronger.
"Managing a kitchen is a perfectly respectable job," said Lieutenant Isaiah, "but I can only imagine how difficult it must be to be bred to be a servant and instead of taking an assignment that truly suits, to be thrust into a position of such authority. Not everyone is cut out to be an officer."
The door opened, and Lieutenant Orne stepped in, just as the last sentence left Lieutenant Isaiah's mouth. Silence engulfed the decade room. Lieutenant Isaiah looked calm and unconcerned, but felt abashed. She had clearly not intended, would never have dared, to say such things openly to Lieutenant Orne. Only Lieutenant Darriot spoke.
"Good morning, Lieutenant."
Lieutenant Orne didn't answer, didn't even look at her, but went to the corner of the room where the decade shrine sat, with its small figure of Torin and bowl of burning incense. Lieutenant Orne made her obeisance to the figure and then looked at the bowl with a slight frown. As before, her muscles were tense, her heart rate elevated, and I knew she guessed at the content, or at least the drift of the conversation before she had entered, knew who it was who wasn't cut out to be an officer. She turned.
"Good morning, Lieutenants. I apologize for having kept you waiting."
And launched without any other preamble into the morning prayer.
The flower of justice is peace. The others joined, and when they were finished, Lieutenant Orne went to her place at the head of the table, sat. Before the others had time to settle themselves, I had tea and breakfast in front of her. I served the others, and Lieutenant Orne took a sip of her tea and began to eat. Lieutenant Darriot picked up her utensil.
It's good to have you back.
Her voice was just slightly edged, only barely managing to conceal her anger.
Thank you,
said Lieutenant Orne, and took another bite of fish.
I still need tea, said Lieutenant Isaiah.
The rest of the table was tense and hushed, watching.
The quiet is nice, but perhaps there's been a decline in efficiency?
Lieutenant Orne chewed, swallowed, took another drink of tea.
Pardon?
You've managed to silence one Esk, explained Lieutenant Isaiah. But...
She raised her empty bowl. At that moment I was behind her with the flask and poured, filling the bowl. Lieutenant Orne raised one gloved hand, gesturing toward the mootness of Lieutenant Isaiah's point.
I haven't silenced one Esk.
She looked at the segment with the flask and frowned.
Not intentionally, anyway.
Go ahead and sing if you want, one Esk. A dozen lieutenants groaned. Lieutenant Isaiah smiled, insincerely. Lieutenant Darriot stopped, a bite of fish halfway to her mouth.
I like the singing. It's nice. And it's a distinction.
It's embarrassing is what it is, said the lieutenant close to Lieutenant Isaiah.
I don't find it embarrassing, said Lieutenant Orne, a bit stiffly.
Of course not, said Lieutenant Isaiah, malice concealed in the ambiguity of her words. Why so quiet then, one?
I've been busy, Lieutenant, I answered, and I haven't wanted to disturb Lieutenant Orne.
Your singing doesn't disturb me, one, said Lieutenant Orne. I'm sorry you thought it did. Please, sing if you want.
Lieutenant Isaiah raised an eyebrow.
An apology and a please? That's a bit much.
Courtesy, said Lieutenant Darriot, her voice uncharacteristically prim, is always proper. And always beneficial.
Lieutenant Isaiah smirked.
Thank you, Mother.
Lieutenant Orne said nothing. 4.5 hours after breakfast, the shuttle, bearing those 4 second bow lieutenants home from their leave, docked. They'd been drinking for 3 days, and had continued right up to the moment they left Shasona Station. The first of them through the lock staggered slightly, and then closed her eyes.
Medic,
she breathed. They expect you, I said through the segment of one bow I'd placed there. Do you need help onto the lift? The lieutenant made a feeble attempt to wave my offer away and moved off slowly down the corridor, one shoulder against the wall for support. I boarded the shuttle, kicking off past the boundary of my artificially generated gravity. The shuttle was too small to have its own. Two of the officers, still drunk themselves, were trying to wake the fourth, passed out cold in her seat. The pilot, the most junior of the bow officers, sat stiff and apprehensive. I thought at first her discomfort was due to the reek of spilled arak and vomit. Thankfully, the former had apparently been spilled onto the lieutenants themselves, on Shasona Station, and nearly all of the latter had gone into the appropriate receptacles. But then I looked. One bow looked, toward the stern, and saw 3 Anna and Amir Na'ais sitting silent and impassive in the rear seats. Not there, to me. She would have boarded at Shasona Station, quietly, told the pilot to say nothing to me. The others had, I suspected, been too intoxicated to notice her. I thought of her asking me on the planet when she had last visited me, of my inexplicable and reflexive lie. The real last time had been a good deal like this. My lord, I said, when all the bow lieutenants were out of earshot, I'll notify the 100 captain.
No, said one Anaander. Your var deck is empty.
Yes, my lord, I acknowledged.
I'll stay there while I'm on board.
Nothing further, no why or how long, or when I could tell the captain what I was doing. I was obliged to obey Anna and Amir Na'ai, even over my own captain,
but I rarely had an order from one without the knowledge of the other. It was uncomfortable. I sent segments of one esk to retrieve one var from the hold, started one section of var deck warming. The three Anna and Amir Na'ais declined my offer of assistance with their luggage, carried their things down to var. This had happened before, at Valskai. My lower decks had been mostly empty, because many of my troops had been out of the hold and working. She had stayed on the esk deck that time. What had she wanted then? What had she done? To my dismay, I found my thoughts slipping around the answer, which remained vague, invisible. That wasn't right. It wasn't right at all. Between the esk and var decks was direct access to my brain. What had she done at Valskai that I couldn't remember? And what was she preparing to do now?